Income inequality is coming up regularly in the long buildup to next year's presidential election. There is evidence that income inequality has risen in the United States, some say noticeably, since the 1970s. The issue has gone on to become a feature of the political divide in the country, with the left insisting on the importance of a shared prosperity, while the right often downplays the need or the ability to influence the issue. So how does Michigan fit in the income inequality debate? That's what MSU economics professor Charlie Ballard recently explored. We welcome him back to Current State. It's good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
This project focused on income distribution. What were you trying to find out exactly?
Well, you're absolutely right that nationally there has been a huge increase in income inequality since the middle to late 1970s. So almost 40 years now of increasing inequality, with the top pulling away from the middle and the bottom. But what hasn't been studied as much, and what I and my colleague Paul Menchik have been looking at, is How does it look in the different regions of the country, in different states? And so we've actually calculated the change in different places in the income distribution for all 50 states and the District of Columbia. Well, for the U.S. as a whole, the bottom and the middle have done so-so, and the top has done really, really well in the last 40 years. Michigan looks sort of like the U.S., except throughout the income distribution, we haven't done as well. In other words, the middle class in Michigan has done very poorly, really have no growth in 40 years. And the 10th percentile, 20th percentile, 30th percentile, the lower middle class, the poor, have gone nowhere. But if you get above the middle in Michigan, you have seen growth. And if you're way toward the top in Michigan, very substantial growth. So we sort of mirror the U.S. as a whole, although the top hasn't done as well in Michigan as in many other parts of the country. And the middle especially has not done nearly as well as in some other parts of the country. I would say that for the middle class in the last 40 years, for the U.S. as a whole, it's sort of mediocre. For Michigan,
it's gone up, but just
gone up,
very little.
Exactly. Okay. Gone up, but not by much, and not by nearly as much as at the top. And then in Michigan, the middle class, actually, we calculated, where are you in 2013 relative to 1976, adjusting for inflation? The middle of the income distribution has made no gains.
Did you look into why these discrepancies became broader?
A big part of it is that different education groups have done very differently. High school dropouts, but even those who have a high school diploma have seen declining real incomes. If you've got a bachelor's degree, you've seen halfway decent growth, and the bachelor's in Michigan, about between 25% and 30% of the adult population has a bachelor's degree. And then the group that has done the best of all, by far, is those who have education beyond a bachelor's, an MBA, a law degree, a doctor's degree, that sort of thing. Another factor is the decline of unions. Unions, for a few decades in the middle of the 20th century, really helped to support the incomes of sort of lower middle income and middle income workers. But unions have been losing strength for really since the 1950s.
Was deregulation an issue here, as far as you're concerned? You did look at the causes, though.
We were mostly just measuring and looking at the differences, but we did also look at some of the causes. Mm-hmm. One of the big stories, it's not so much a story for hurting the middle class, but it's a story for helping those at the very top, is the deregulation of financial services. Mm. The deregulation of Wall Street, the big banks, the investment banks, has transferred literally trillions to a relatively small number of people. And that also paved the way for the Great Recession, for the financial crisis that hit 7 years ago next week.
You would say then that this topic is rightfully a part of the debate leading up to the presidential election?
Oh, I would absolutely say. I mean, in my view, you can make the argument that the increase in income inequality is the biggest economic story of our lifetime. Mm. It is, at least in substantial part, it is the result of policy changes. I mean, it didn't just happen. It is at least in part the result of policies. We have a much less progressive tax system than we used to have. We deregulated financial services, and that really spurred the inequality. Education support hasn't kept up with the demands for highly skilled workers. So it is a big issue, and I think it would be appropriate for those seeking public office to have to address it.
Mm-hmm. MSU economics professor Charlie Ballard is our guest. We're talking about some of Charlie's recent work exploring the income distribution here in Michigan. You focused on the years 1976 to 2013.
That's right.
Okay, so it included the Great Recession.
Uh-huh.
Another education point here. Early childhood education seems to be, there seems to be a consensus that we need to invest more in that and that we are investing more in that. Did that come out in any way in your work?
Well, I'm a big supporter of improved support for early childhood education. I don't think that there's only an indirect connection between this research work and that. All of the evidence is that those who have the more skills are going to do better, not just in terms of their earnings in the labor market, but also they're going to have fewer teenage pregnancies, they're going to have less crime, all sorts of better indicators. And the thing that plays a bigger role in that than any other thing is the early childhood. And I think I'm critical of the lack of support for education in many places in Michigan and in the United States, but I really applaud our legislature and Governor Snyder for increasing the number of spaces available for early childhood education, because that is an investment that earns a terrific rate of return for society. That rate of return, we won't see it for years, because, you know, today's four-year-olds, they won't be in the labor market for
right.
a while, but it is, the historical evidence is that it really has a big effect.
Your data coexists with some amount of encouraging economic news, at least recently. Unemployment down, inflation amazingly low for years now, a broad rebound in manufacturing, including here in Michigan. Assuming you're right about this broader trend, have middle and lower class workers made up any ground recently?
Yes. The worst, of course, was 2009 and 2010. And we've seen in Michigan, the unemployment rate peaked at higher than 14%. It's now down not much above 5%. And so we have made some progress, but that's against the background of the previous decade being really, really pretty rough. And even with the improved employment, there are an awful lot of folks who aren't seeing the kind of wages that I would like them to see. The wages have been stagnant, barely keeping up with inflation for a very large portion of the population, especially the sort of the middle and lower income strata. And as a result, that means that even with this rebound from the Great Recession, we haven't had a turnaround in the income inequality. In fact, in Michigan, the income inequality actually grew in the 5 years after the Great Recession. Mm. It continued to grow because the middle class did sort of so-so. Their wages barely kept up with inflation, but those at the top did even relatively better.
Care to speculate at all on the possible impact of right to work on income distribution? That's a pretty speculative question. But
well, my sense is that right to work really has had very little effect. But that's not because it's irrelevant. It's just because unions had lost so much ground. in previous decades that, in a sense, we already had right to work before that law was passed almost 3 years ago. The fraction of the Michigan workforce that is a member of a union used to be 45% in 1964, which is the earliest year for which we have good data on it. Now it's down below 20%. And in fact, in the private sector, it's below 10%. So unions are, for better or worse, much weaker. And I don't see any evidence that the right to work law of a couple of years ago has had any further effect, because the unions were already pretty weak.
I want to bring up a study released last year by sociologists from Cornell and Washington University, last names Herschel and Rank. They used government data, and the results of their work suggest that there is great fluidity in the U.S. economy, that many Americans over a period of decades are apt to spend a year or some number of years in poverty at some time in their lives, but they often manage to rise out of it. And to be sure, it works in the opposite direction as well. Fortune magazine commentator Chris Matthews, not the Chris Matthews, but this Chris Matthews, theorized that this is why income inequality is failing to resonate more as an issue, because quite a few Americans have faith that they can escape whatever their economic circumstances are at the moment, that people who are in poverty may have been affluent at one point, and they have confidence they can get out of whatever financial straits there are. What do you make of that fluidity argument? Is that present?
That is, and but there is a gap between the perception and the reality. A study by Alberto Alessina and Edward Glazer showed that the amount of economic mobility in the United States is really not that great. Mm. And in fact, Gary Solon, who's just recently moved from Michigan State to University of Arizona, is sort of the world's leading expert on this, and he finds the degree of mobility is modest. Yes, it is true. You can certainly tell stories about individuals who were in poverty and came out of it, and also individuals who were rich and then had a turn for the worse. But the overall degree of mobility is not huge. But the American myth is of huge mobility. Rags to riches, pull yourself up by
durable,
your bootstraps.
A durable myth.
It's a durable myth. And that explains one of the differences between us and Europe. The degree of actual mobility is very similar. But the Americans have the myth of mobility, and the Europeans do not. And that's one of the reasons why the Europeans have a stronger social safety net.
We're down to 30 seconds. I was hoping we'd have more time for this, but speaking of Europe, you're just back from Italy, where you traveled. You rubbed shoulders with, well, you don't rub shoulders with the MSU men's basketball team when you're not 6'8", but you did hang out with the basketball team. How did that unfold?
Mark Hollis, MSU's athletic director, gets the credit for this idea that we wanted them to have the opportunity to play against these top-flight European competition, but also to have it be an academic experience. So I crafted a one-credit course. We had some classroom meetings before we went, and then I accompanied the team and provided commentary, and it was a great experience.
Charlie Ballard is a professor of economics at Michigan State University. We've been talking about income inequality and the trends around income inequality specifically here in Michigan. It's been the focus of some of Professor Ballard's recent work. Good to see you, Charlie. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.